It is Tuesday, March 16th. Shoot, man, we are like 4 days away from March Madness. And I know this is a college football show, but March Madness is freaking awesome, isn't it? For those of you that love college sports and competitiveness, and the tournament is like nothing else. So we're fired up for it. I know, obviously, if you guys have been following us on @MenaceToPicks, our gambling handicapping service, for $25 a month, you can get all of our college basketball picks, and we are absolutely scorching right now, up like 150 units the last, I don't know, 5-6 days. So we are primed for a big tournament. If you want to come gamble with us a little bit, let us know, hit us up or check it out, patreon.com/MenaceToPicks. But not going to, you know, promo. I'm going to do a couple promos, though. The other thing I want to mention, if you haven't already reached out, is we're doing squares for charity. The square, if you guys know the squares, 100 squares, you know, the final score of every single game, you could pay $100, get a square, and then that, whatever your numbers are, they play in all 63 games. And you win tiered winnings based on what round it is. Like the national championship, you win $1,000 if you hit that one. So if you're interested, reach out, Zach@menace2sports.com. That's my email. Shoot me an email. I'll get you linked up. We'll get you on the board. I think we only have like 20 squares left, so it'll certainly be full when March Madness kicks off. So if you want to be a part of it, let me know. Hit me up, because once the board's full, it's full. But never mind that. I have one quick word from our long and loyal sponsor. If you haven't checked them out, please check them out. Here's a word from MyBookie. March is here and the madness has officially begun. It's time for you to shoot your shot and score big on the nonstop action with MyBookie. Select the winners from 63 tournament games in the MyBookie bracket contest for a chance at $10,000 in cash prizes, and it's only $1 to enter. It doesn't matter whether you're filling out multiple brackets, betting the national championship winner, or simply looking for player and game props, MyBookie has you covered. Sign up today at mybookie.ag and use promo code MENACE to secure a deposit bonus up to $1,000. That's promo code MENACE to claim your first deposit bonus. College ball, NBA, and NHL. No matter the sport, no matter the minute, from tip-off to buzzer, MyBookie puts the action in your hands with in-game live betting. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. Well, there you go. That's all the gambling stuff we have going right now. I wanted to throw it out there because, honestly, it's a big month for us at Menace to Sports. Platform is expanding. If you haven't checked out our YouTube, that's our newest pillar to our platform, right? We are going to be a 5-pillar platform soon. Audio, obviously, it started with audio media with the podcast. It grew into the gambling tier or pillar that has exploded, and now we're working on the video pillar. And once we get those three done, we're going into athlete development next, and then the fifth one is yet to be announced, but definitely looking for growth, trying to make this thing just, I mean, international, which it already is. The podcast is. I'm trying to make everything blow up. So I appreciate your support first and foremost. If you ever want to leave feedback or email me, Zach@MenaceToSports. I love talking to everybody. I love feedback and I love interaction. Or if you want to go on and rate us 5 stars on the podcast, we appreciate that too. But anyways, great show for you today. Going to talk a little throwback segment about So You Want to Be a Coach from one of our YouTube videos. And then also Devin Smith, the greatest deep ball receiver in the history of maybe college football, but certainly Ohio State football, is going to join us for like 50-minute conversation. And it's unbelievable. But I mean, it's under the hood, behind the scenes, unfiltered. You're going to hear about his career playing for Urban, what he ate for breakfast before the Big Ten championship game against Wisconsin, where he absolutely went off. It's an awesome interview, and I loved catching up with him and having him on. He's one of my favorite guys that I coached. So without further ado, let's get to the show.
What a hit, Denzel Ward. You got barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Well, he has trouble with the snap, and the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson, and he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then.
I am.
Okay, see ya.
Do you want to be a football coach? We all want to make $500,000. We all want to coach NFL athletes and just, you know, coach on Saturdays in the Horseshoe or big stadiums in front of 100,000 people. But would you really put in the work to get there? I'm going to tell you a little bit about my story and a common story that is not rare in college football. So usually you start out as an unpaid intern. How you are funding that life is really up to you. I took out $50,000 in loans so that I could be an unpaid intern for essentially 2 years at the University of Florida and work over 120 hours a week, in season, out of season, didn't matter. So I took out a loan to afford that lifestyle. So that hopefully I could get a GA job. A GA job is graduate assistant where you're in grad school. You have to take grad school classes, though most coaches don't really like it when you go to class. You have to do all that and you get a stipend, right? Now you're truly an on-the-field coach. You're allowed to go on the field. You're allowed to coach players. You're allowed to legally do those things. Now, don't get me started on the guys that aren't allowed to that do anyways. That runs rampant. Just look at Alabama staff or Ohio State staff for that. People call me an Ohio State homer because most of my clothing has a block O on it, but Ohio State has a million interns and people that are on the field also. Big-time programs do. But anyways, you're a GA. When I was a GA, we got paid $250 to $300 every month. That was our salary. Now, they paid for school. Mind you, I didn't get a master's degree. Didn't care about a master's degree. I was just doing it to become a coach, right? You have to put in insane hours. So how did I live? After my loans ran out, a guy named Frank Perino, who's a strength coach down at the Tennessee Titans, and I were really good friends, both kind of introductory roles at Florida. We both decided we were going to move into the facility and live in the locker room. And we lived in this dirty old, it was a locker room for managers and trainers. Nice big area, old couches from the players' locker room. God knows what filth was on them. And we lived there for like nine or 10 months just because we didn't have money for rent. So we slept there every night, woke up, went to work. And then, luckily they had showers and lockers. So we got two lockers, put all our stuff we owned in there and I was a grinder for 5 years. I grinded to try to get that first opportunity. And then it's about how do you provide value? Probably the number one question I get is people reaching out. I want to coach college football. How can I do it? And the answer is very simple. Contact 100 schools and ask them if you could be an unpaid intern. You just want to learn and get your foot in the door. You'll get some yeses. And if you're willing to make that sacrifice, you'll get your foot in the door. Right? So that's kind of that's a very blunt and quick version of how you get into the industry. Then you have to provide value and actually get hired and save the narrative about my grandfather, because I've been hired by three coaches in my career and all three thought I did an outstanding job. So some of them had no tie to my grandfather. But anyways, enough about me. I want to talk about the in-season schedule of a college football coach. Buckle up. You add these hours up at the end because it's over 100 hours. So on Sunday of game week, right? In season on Sunday, usually have breakfast with your family. There's really only three times you're going to see your family in the course of a week, right? Sunday morning, Friday morning, if it's a home game, and then Wednesday after practice. Now, this is Urban's program. Most programs are similar, right? You have to get in and have the film graded by 10 a.m. So you do that math. What time do your kids wake up? How long do you have to spend with them? If you have to have your film graded and done by 10 a.m. in the office. Most of the time, I would wake up at 6 a.m., grade the film at home so I could spend about an hour and a half with my kids. Then you go in, and after 10 a.m., you have your grades ready. You sit down as an offensive or defensive staff. You review the game, review the grades, what happened, talk about issues, talk about the game, right? Then you watch the film as a staff, usually with the head coach, specifically if you are on the same side of the ball as the head coach's expertise. Then you discuss every play, the call, the defense, potential solutions, what went wrong, why it worked, the communication process, why it was called. It's, I mean, to exhaustion. And then you usually get done about 1 o'clock. You break and start to watch the next week's opponent. You get back together to talk about a couple hours later, probably 2-3 hours later, you get back together to talk about the next opponent and plan a short practice on Sunday night. You take a break to get around your players. A lot of times there's a church service, and then you go have what is usually a 10 period practice. A period is 5 minutes or so, and discuss the and you really want to have an efficient practice. All it is to break a sweat and get your guys that played to get some work in and get out of there pretty quick. 50 minutes, and then young guys usually will stay after. And you'll have a pretty decent secondary practice to develop them, right? Then you have victory meal, assuming you won. We had victory meal. I'm talking crab, lobster, steak, you name it. I mean, it is carte blanche, as good as it gets if you win. If you don't win, usually some burgers. It just is how it is. You're usually out of there by 10 p.m. That's Sunday. Monday is a grind. No practice. I mean, you're talking 16, 17 hour day just in the office. Don't see the light of day. You're in around 6 a.m. usually. So every day starts at 7. But if you get there at 7, you're really late. You have to get in at least at 6 a.m. to kind of get your stuff organized, kind of get yourself organized and get ready for 7 a.m. Then usually you'll break apart and study the upcoming opponent with specific responsibilities. I was a third down red zone coach, right? From 7 to 10, you would study the upcoming opponent, right? At noon, then you usually get back together at 10, talk about some first and second down stuff. Maybe take a break at noon to get a workout in for 30 minutes, then come back. The head coach would usually have a press conference, which is the greatest time because you knew he was never going to call you. And that was kind of your morning. You'd reconvene around 1:30 and start to grind through formation by formation. Each alignment you have, watch the film and talk about what this opponent does and what might be good for you to run, right? You do that for 6-7 hours. Probably 9 or 10, and you grind through it. Then you usually break up for an hour from 6 to 7 to work on some situational stuff. Come back from 7 to 10, finish first and second down, and you have an initial game plan now only on first and second down calls for the upcoming opponent. Tuesday, same schedule. Now you have practice, but in around 6 a.m., things start at 7. At Ohio State, we did a staff Bible study every morning, every Tuesday at 7 a.m. 7:30, it's over. You review the entire game plan you worked on Monday. Talk through every potential issue, every possible blitz they run and how it might cause problems. There's nothing you're not prepared for until you're not, right? Then from 11 to 12, you preview your situational stuff, third down, red zone, maybe add a unique package, a wildcat, a trick play. And then you start scripting practice about noon. Eat something quick, script practice, 2 o'clock kicking meetings, 2:20 position meetings, 3:20, you break and get ready to take the field. Then you're on the field for about, two hours-ish. And then the minute practice is over, you hustle in, interns get you dinner, bring it down to the staff room, and then you watch every snap of practice film until about 11 p.m. Now you put in a bloody Tuesday, we used to call it. Wednesday, similar day. Now the only difference is you're going to leave after practice. In at 6 a.m., official start is 7. 7, you go through the entire game plan and clean it all up, throw stuff out you don't like, maybe add a wrinkle here or there, and then 9 o'clock, staff meeting. You got to do recruiting, right? You can't forget about recruiting. It's a 24/7 job, and you can't forget about it in season or you're going to really be screwed. So usually have about an hour meeting where you'll talk about recruits, what's any updates, who the head coach needs to talk to, go through all of that, right? At 10 o'clock is when you usually start your to present your situational stuff, third down, red zone, short yardage, goal line, et cetera, et cetera. Talk about self-scout, what you've done, what has been good, and what you want to do against Alabama this week or whoever it is. Then you break for lunch around 12:01, and you have about an hour to get ready for kicking meetings, special teams, or position meetings, and practice. You got to script every play scripted, every defense scripted, very detailed, very specific. Post-practice, you get to go home and spend time with your family. What that means is you go home and maybe eat dinner quick and then make 3 to 4 hours of recruiting calls from home. So how much quality time are you really getting on Wednesday night? You're there, but you're calling recruits nonstop. Thursday was my favorite day. The game plan's done. You're going to tinker it here and there. You're going to tweak it, shine it up, get it ready. In at 6 a.m. again, start at 7. 7 o'clock, you have to watch Wednesday's practice because you didn't get to watch it Wednesday night. You went home to spend time with family. All right, 9 o'clock staff meeting. Now you got to talk about your current players' academics. You really got to go through player by player, class by class, how they're doing so that nothing surprises you at the end of the semester and some kid's ineligible. We never had an ineligible kid in my entire career at my position. And at Ohio State, we didn't the entire time I was there. So that's important and critical for the big picture, right? Then you break the staff meeting, you discuss the plan, issues that came up, adjust and fine tune, and then you have what's called Perfect Thursday. Right? That practice is, there's no good on good. It's all versus the scout team. Every play is scripted for success. You want your players leaving Thursday's practice feeling like they just won the Super Bowl. They are prepared to take on the New York football Giants, right? If a ball is on the ground, the head coach is going to lose his mind, right? He used to say, no balls on the ground, no callbacks, no bingos, right? No redos. If you have to redo it, you're not ready to do it on Saturday. So you usually get 2 o'clock kicking, same type of schedule with the meetings. Every rep has to succeed or else it's a failure. It's called competitive excellence, right? When your number's called, will you get the job done? The only way to know that is if you do it consistently in practice. Thursday is that day. Then Friday, if it's a home game, you get to take your kids to school, show, get in at about 10 a.m. If it's a road game, forget about it. In at 6, start at 7 because you got to account for travel time. And sorry, your family loses the time. No one else loses the time if there's travel time. You watch Thursday's practice, and if there was an issue, you need to either figure out if you're throwing the play out or if you can get it ready for Saturday, right? Then you break at noon for what we call best Fridays in football, right? We have a Friday meeting with a tip sheet, a test. Who do you trust? In what order? It's what I used to ask my players. I used to ask my players, who do you trust? And give me the order of trust. The most trustworthy guy in this room. Who is it to you? It told me everything. Because players know more than coaches. And then you got to get motivation, right? Well, I had a guy named Keenan Bailey who was outstanding. It may be a video. It may be a quote. Usually a video because that gets the blood flowing. It could be a speech you got to write, right? It's to get them locked in for the 48 or 24-hour preparation they're about to go through. Then you go out and we used to pre-Friday walkthrough was kind of like game time. Everyone got to do a game. The receivers, we used to play basketball with a trash cans and a football. You got two steps and had to shoot or pass, right? It was, I mean, probably the most competitive thing they did all week, to be honest with you. And then you had a Friday walkthrough. You hit those situational plays you didn't maybe hit. Maybe it's a bizarre blitz versus a certain play that you have in the game plan. So you want to make sure that they saw that, right? They got a mental rep at it. So if it shows up in a game, they can react to it as opposed to get confused and get lost. This is where a lot of coaches fail, I think, is a kid will see a blitz he didn't see all week and they just expect them to pick it up. I don't know how you expect them to pick it up. They've never done that. How would they do it now against better players going full speed? But anyways, that's the week. Then you go to the hotel. I'm going to talk about game day on another episode. This is long enough already, but that is a game week. That is the week. You're talking about a grind. What did I say? Sunday morning, maybe with your kids, maybe. Wednesday night, while you're making recruiting calls. Thursday night after practice, you get to go home. So you get Thursday night. If you're a coordinator, you might have to game plan. But anyways, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. Already a little long-winded. Going to talk about kind of that game day routine next week. But I hope you enjoyed it. Do me a favor. Hit like, hit subscribe, turn on the bell. Hang with us at Menace to Sports. We do a live show every Tuesday, 7 p.m. Call in and let's talk football or whatever you want to talk about. But I'll see you next episode. All right, so a quick mashup of some of our YouTube content. As I mentioned, a lot of these shows are going to be hybrid, right? Some of our YouTube content, some original content of just, audio content. But I want to get to the interview. And as we mentioned, this week we're transforming, as we transform the platform, we're going back to our original, our tiered Patreon, structure. So this episode, I'm going to give you this interview, for all out to the public because it's such a great interview. Our episode on Thursday will be, 50-50, a hybrid model, part subscription, part free to the public. And we'll be doing that moving forward, getting back to the roots of the podcast. But without further ado, here's Devin Smith in his interview on Menace to Sports. All right, next on Menace to Sports, I am very fortunate to have one of my all-time favorite players that I coach, definitely one of the best players that I ever not only coached and saw play, but welcome the deep ball receiver himself, Devin Smith, back to on the show for the first time. What's up, Devin?
Man, what's up, Coach? Man, I appreciate you having me, man.
Absolutely, man. So first I want to, I kind of told you before, I want to talk about, your journey, right? But first and foremost, give me and the listeners an update on what's going on with you.
Man, just grinding, man. I'm still in it. I'm with New England right now.
Yeah.
Man, by the grace of God, man, I'm still here going at it, man. Ready to catch the next deep ball, you know what I mean?
Hey, as many as you can, right?
For sure.
We were just talking about it, and I didn't throw the stats out at you, but you played in a game against Cal, and you'll remember that game as the game where you had four catches, four touchdowns for 260-some yards. I will remember it as a game that you had two drops that also would have been touchdowns. You would have had a six-catch, six-touchdown day.
Yeah,
that,
man.
That was something you rarely did. You rarely dropped the ball, but I'll never forget that because I was like, this son of a bitch could have had six catches, six touchdowns.
Something slight. Yeah,
slight.
For sure. I know I had a game like that in Indiana, too.
Yeah, that's a fact.
Indiana up there.
That's a fact.
But yeah, I let a couple go, man. It still bite me to this day. But
hey, you know what? That's what happens. If you play long enough and you get targeted enough, you have a drop. It's just gonna happen, right?
Well, definitely.
So I wanna start kind of and just talk about coming out of Maslin as you weren't like a five-star recruit. Nobody knew that you were, and I'll tell a quick story as to how no one really knew. I was at Marshall and I went into your high school. And I'm like, you know, first time recruiting Ohio. I'm like, all right, I'm definitely going to go to Maslin. Like, this is one of the most legendary programs ever. So I went in there, and your head coach wouldn't pull you out of class. And I'm like, why not? Like, he was like, coach, like, you're not going to, like, get him. And I was like, I'm looking at your offer list. Like, he doesn't have good offers, like, great offers yet. So I was pissed about it. And then sure enough, what, 2 years later, I roll into Ohio State, and there you are.
Yeah, man. So a lot of people, I don't know if they know, but, you know, I'm from Akron, Ohio. So yeah. I started at Ellett, Akron Ellett. I don't know. A lot of people probably don't even know about that school.
No, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, so I started there my freshman and sophomore year. And then me and my family, we ended up moving to Maslin. I got family down in Maslin.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you know, I really wasn't even thinking of college football. Yeah. To be completely honest, when I was in Akron, is because it's not too many guys, you know, really did anything from that high school. And, you know, I started getting looked at by, you know, a lot of local schools, Akron, Kent, Cincinnati was knocking on the door a little bit. But I remember, let's say it was like after my freshman year in high school, I remember Jim Bowman came up to the school, and it was just like the most exciting thing to me. I was like, wow, man, Ohio State came up and talked to me, you know, like it's
right.
And so just from then on, I just had this mindset of just continuing to just keep working, man, and just, you know, put everything out there, man, and see what happens. And so I ended up moving to Maslin, and, you know, really wasn't, like you said, I really wasn't a highly touted guy, you know what I mean?
I
did three sports, you know, football, basketball, and track, and excelled in all three of them.
Well, and I'll never forget, like, going into your high school, I was like, "There, like, I'm missing something here," because you had documented track times, documented high jumper. Like, what's your highest high jump right now to date?
7.2.
Like, I don't know if people know that. That's like jumping over Shaq. That's what that is. Like, that's – so I'm looking at it like your film was great. You were a great-looking – like kid, like you were tall, long, and you had documented track times, documented jumps. I'm like, this doesn't add up. Like, this kid should be blown up. Like, what is going on? But yeah, obviously what we found out later was after Ohio State did offer you, right, then that I was right and they were wrong, right? Whatever you were, three-star, four, whatever it was, it's like, come on, man, this kid's way better.
Yeah. I think I was a three-star, to be completely honest. But the crazy thing is, though, like, I remember – just like when I started racking up some of the offers and stuff, and the one offer that I was waiting for, I was like, man, Ohio State gotta come.
Right.
You know, I was cool with me and Duran. You know, we've been close for a very long time. And, you know, Steve Miller, you know, he was in Canton. So, you know, that's local. That was our rival.
Yeah.
And it just, I'm talking about, I was going to camps and I just would not get the offer. And I'm like, yo, what's going on? Michigan State offered me. A lot of the Big Ten schools had already offered me.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ohio State came through one day after a training camp, or not a training camp, but a camp I did up there. And I remember Braxton was up there. And they, you know, paired us up, throwing the ball and stuff like that, man, and ended up getting the offer, man. And I kind of already knew where I was going.
Oh, of course.
So it was exciting when I got it.
Absolutely, man. That's awesome. Well, I want to start off and just talk about kind of your career, you know, incrementally, because it starts off kind of the most chaotic time probably in the history of Ohio State football. I mean, just wild. And just talk to me about that year, your freshman year. Not only was it wild, like everything that went down with Tressel and all the shit that they, you know, threw in the media about it. Then, you know, Fick takes over, Braxton takes over. It's like, it just was chaos. So many things. And you're a true freshman on the field already. Like, it's not like you were just a freshman trying to figure things out. Like, you're catching, you know, last second touchdowns against whoever it was, Wisconsin. Just talk about that year.
Yeah, man, that was a challenging year, man, for us, just because, I mean, the fans are accustomed to Ohio State winning. And, you know, that was a year I think we went 7-6 that year. You know, we're not too good of a football team. But me coming in as a freshman, you know, I was just telling myself, like, I got to get on the field. Let me go out here and just show what I can do.
Yeah.
And so I would get put in, and, you know, from the first game on, I scored a touchdown, and I knew how good that feeling was just scoring, especially at Ohio State. I mean, being in that stadium is second to none. And, you know, I just kept working, just kept chipping away, man, and just trying to find ways to, you know, get myself open, and you know, ended up playing good. You know, I had a decent freshman year. I ended up with, like, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 touchdowns.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, it was definitely a challenging year, just from having the core guys that we had. You know, we had DeVere Posey at the time, who didn't play pretty much his whole senior year.
Right.
Terrell Pryor was supposed to be there. He ended up not being there. So we had a lot of key guys. Boom Herring, he wasn't there for the first few games of the season. But I felt like that year was like the start of, you know, some of the guys who, you know, myself, Ryan Shazier, Duran Grant, Braxton, you know, it was like the introduction of that 2011 class.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot of promise was shown. You know, you saw guys like you, Evan, and like Braxton, just, you know, you could tell, like, you're young, like you haven't figured shit out yet, but
at all.
Like at all. But I remember when I first got the job, I walked in, I started watching the film. I was like, man, these cats are talented, but they're just like out there just running. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, definitely.
Talk to me about the next part of that phase, which is when Urban Meyer shows up and I show up and our whole staff rolls into town. There was a transition there for you and for the whole team. Everyone had to go through, because he had a little different style.
Man, completely different style. I mean, shit, I felt like we was in the military when he came in. And it was just like, when you're in it at first, you like, what the hell are we doing?
Right.
But as, you know, obviously, you know, we progress and you know, we see why he did the things that he did.
Yeah.
You know, and it ended up paying in the end.
Yeah.
And man, it was just one of those things. I remember the we were out there middle of January, mm-hmm. cold as hell, like 4 a.m. It wasn't no 5, no 6. No, it was 4 a.m. And
I don't think it's legal to do that.
Man, like it was unbelievable. Yeah. And it was just like some of the things that we were doing, it was like all simple stuff too, you know, lunges and shit like that. But like, it was breaking us down.
Yeah.
I remember leaving and going to class, and a couple of guys on the team, we had the same class. I'm talking about, we walking in slow as hell, late, going to class, like sore, like, oh my gosh, we ended up falling asleep in the class.
Right.
And the teacher there, the professor was like, man, what's going on with you guys? I'm like, yeah, we just went through the ringer, man.
You're gonna have to cut us a break.
Yeah, we done got our ass whooped real quick.
Well, you know, it's all hindsight's always 20/20, right? You saw not only your own personal success, like your own personal development, but then also winning a national championship. All those things make it easier to look back and say, oh, it makes sense now, right?
No, most definitely, yeah. So
my favorite game, I think, as a coach, probably definitely one of them. What people always ask, like, what was your favorite game? And I think it was Michigan State 2014 was my favorite game. Talk to me about the run, right? Winning 24 straight games, losing Michigan State, losing to Clemson, and then kind of that Michigan State breaking that streak and keeping us from a national championship game. And then that next year playing them again. Just talk to me about that game, what that game meant, and what you were thinking kind of going into it.
Yeah, so I mean, the first time we played them in the Big Ten Championship, that was like the biggest loss to me, and it hurt so deep, just because I knew everything that we've been through. It was our first time being able to attain a championship, and we ended up falling short. And I just remember going into the next year, mat drills, and I'm talking about everybody is out there doing everything with intention. I mean, putting everything out there. And going into that game, 2014, man, I just remember just being so fired up. I remember, I think it was after the first half, I remember we was walking into the back in the locker room, and Coach Meyer walked up to me. He was like, man, I like it when you're fucking fired up like that. And like, it fueled me up even more, and just being able to, you know, pretty much, you know, in a sense, having that get back on that team that, you know, stopped us from, you know, obtaining something that we've been trying to get for so long.
And I think it was a very personal game for us. I'm talking about zone six. You know what I mean? Like, it was not only did we lose to Michigan State the year before, but we got covered. Like, it was just a bad game for our group. And a lot of it had to do with kind of how they were teaching their secondary, and they got away with, I mean, damn near rape and murder. I mean, with how physical and how much they held and grabbed. And I remember you and I had a moment in that 2013 game where I was like, Devin, like, at some point you have to get open. And you're like, Coach, they're holding me. And I was like, well, they're not calling it. What do you want? Like, we're looking at each other like, what the fuck do you want me to do? I don't know. Yeah. What the fuck do you want me to do?
Man, yeah, that was definitely a frustrating game for sure.
And I mean, you know what? It was a coaching failure is what it was. It wasn't the receivers didn't fail. It was just, we were running an offense as opposed to attacking a defense. In 2014, we attacked the shit out of that defense, you know, doing things like putting you in the slot, getting you isolated on a safety, you know, just all kinds of different things. But that was my favorite game. So talk to me about that 2014 stretch. And what the hell did you eat for breakfast before the Wisconsin game?
man. Well, I think the first day was the chug of water.
Yeah.
championship water. We had that. But man, just the regular old eggs, pancakes, you know, the simple stuff. But man, I think that game for me, you know, I had a stretch my senior year where I really wasn't getting a lot of looks and stuff. And I was kind of frustrated by that because just how competitive I am, I just want to do something. It don't matter if I'm scoring. I just want to be in it. I want to be, you know, part of the reason why we won this game and part of the reason why we dominated this game. And I remember when JT went down and Cardell came in, then that next week going into that week against Wisconsin, I remember that first day in practice, I walked past Cardell and I looked at him. I said, man, you know what time it is, man.
Yeah.
You know what time it is. Just throw that thing up.
Yeah.
And literally, that's exactly what happened. I mean, you guys put me in great position, man, and it was just up to me to just go out there and execute it.
Oh, it was fun to watch. And you had a couple games like that where you just, I don't know, you had a different look in your eye, and it was like Urban used to see it too. He used to look at me and go, Do you see the look in Nine's eyes? And I'm like, fuck yeah, I did. Like, throw that son of a bitch the ball. You hear me?
Man, I need it for sure. Yeah, for me, I think a lot of it was just, you know, even, you know, speaking back to high school, you know, being a three-star recruit coming out, not really, you know, I felt like when I was coming out of everybody that was in that 2011 class going to Ohio State, I felt like I was like the guy they wasn't talking about. And that kind of upset me. And then, you know, there was a lot of guys that I knew that played in the Under Armour All-American game. I didn't get selected for that. And even the Army Bowl, whatever the hell that game was, I didn't even get selected. They said I was nominated, but ended up not getting picked. And so I came into college with a chip on my shoulder, man, just to do everything I can to just make sure people know that I can play this damn game at a high level.
Well, they know now. They learned. They definitely
learned. For sure.
Talk to me about the national championship run, just what it was like to face Bama. And then, you know, the Oregon game to me is always second fiddle. When I talk about it or when people ask about it, it's almost like it didn't happen. Like, I don't really remember much about the Oregon game other than we won it all, and I vividly remember beating Alabama. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So talk to me about that the playoffs, the Bama game, and just kind of – because I've talked about it on my show. No one really knows this. I don't even know that you know this, but in conversations with some of those Alabama coaches, you know, over the next 5 years, it was evident that you were the guy that they were worried about. No one else. Like, and not that they didn't think anyone else was good, but they knew you were going to create problems for them. Right. And so when you were on the field in a passing situation, they checked the coverage to play two man on you every time. Right. Cause they were like, if we don't let Nine beat us deep, we got a chance to win this game. So they checked their coverage, and you still ran by the half field safety with the man player. Like, it just didn't work. So talk to me about that game and just, I guess, that run. What was it like?
Man, I remember it was crazy because I was just talking about this not too long ago, but that Alabama game, that was like the championship to us. Like that was the game where we like We about to lay it on the line right here, right now, and show everybody what we about. Yeah. And I remember, you know, I roomed with Duran, Kurt, and Chase. And I just remember we was watching sports, and I can't remember what they was talking about. But we were all just sitting there, just, you know, kind of talking about how practice went and stuff like that. And I remember standing up, and I'm like, man, let's fucking go, man. Let's go take it to him, man. Let's, like, I was just so hyped just because after we beat Wisconsin, I kind of figured, like, they going to make this matchup be Ohio State and Alabama. And so, you know, going into that game, I just remember coming out the tunnel and just everybody just so focused. I mean, on point with just – everything, and I'm talking about warm-ups. I mean, everybody was just so focused, and we got out there, man, and we got to playing, and it's everybody's making plays. You know, we had our ups and downs in the games, but yeah, and I felt like just that whole year was a lot of ups and downs. So I figured, like, we just been through it, and we know how to overcome it.
Yeah.
And we ended up winning that game, and then on the way back, I'm like, hey, this is gonna be cake next week. We like, all right, I'm not worried about it. We finna go. We about to go handle business, man. But the national championship game, man, it was definitely special. Obviously, you know, just because of just how the format changed with the playoff system and everything. But one thing I do remember was we on the sideline, it up and stuff. Yeah, man, it was something special, man, and it's definitely a memory that I will always remember. Just sharing it with the guys that we done went to war with, you know what I mean? Waking up early as hell to work out, Coach Mick yelling at us all in our face and stuff, but you know, it was all worth it in the end.
It was all worth it. It was all worth it. The one thing that happened that year that I always remember for whatever reason, but it was kind of the emergence of JT Barrett, right? Like just, and I always tell people he wasn't necessarily maybe a great quarterback. I mean, he certainly was a really good quarterback, but people are critical about maybe he couldn't throw deep balls, couldn't do that. And I always point to that 2014 year, like he had no problem that year. Like, I don't know what you're talking about, but the story that I always think of is before the Navy game. I think that was game one. So before that game, JT talked to the offense. And I'll never forget, you and Evan were right next to me, and you looked at me, you're like, that's a grown-ass freshman right there, coach. Like, what the shit was that? Talk about JT pregame, like his little speeches.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he comes from a military background, so he's locked in, and he's still like that to this day.
Yeah.
And I think that's what separated him from you know, other quarterbacks and things like that, just how disciplined he was, how locked in he could be. And he didn't care about if he had the strongest arm or if he was the fastest. He was all about the team. And, you know, he gained that respect just through his hard work and just overcoming what he's overcome. You know, he's had a few knee injuries and stuff like that, and he's overcome that. And
yeah.
He's like just a natural born leader, and you know, still to this day, like I said, man, he's still that same way, and you know, I think that he just had that respect and just that pregame. I mean, when he speak, everybody listens, and
everybody listens.
It was, you know what I mean? It was just one of those listened. Yeah,
exactly. The coaches are like locked in.
Yeah, they like surprised, like, damn, this little guy right here, man.
Right. Crazy.
I knew from his work ethic, man. I knew he was gonna come in and help us tremendously. And I mean,
it's crazy. I've always said that, and when I was coaching, and even now, is like players know, like, you know, from off season workouts, from summer runs, like who you trust or who you think's a bitch, like, you know what I mean? Like you learn that shit in a weight room, like before you ever get on a football field. And that's why when a guy like JT steps in and you can see the offense is like, all right, we're good. Like, we know we've been with this kid in workouts. Like, we know what he's built like, you know what I mean?
Most definitely. You know, it's those workouts, man, they either make you a man or make you a bitch, literally.
So what's the hardest workout you had at Ohio State? Was it a Valentine's Day thing or a mat drill? What was it?
See, like, Matt drills for me when we first did it, I was like scoping it out, like, all right, what the fuck we got next? What are we doing? But after a while, like, it started getting fun just because I, like, just seeing the coaches act crazy, I thought that was the funniest shit ever. And so, you know, I enjoyed it, and it was fun because everybody was out there competing. And, you know, Coach Mick found ways to make it fun. And, you know, we out there working. But I think the hardest one was the same, the master one, when we were out there fucking squatting, or not squatting, but leg pressing. I remember we was leg pressing. They put so much damn weight on there. And I remember Luke Fickle coming over there and, like, literally put his whole body weight while I'm pressing it up. And I'm like, yo, get the fuck off. And so I ended up pushing it off. And a racket, I get off. I'm talking about, as soon as I take a step, I'm legs, noodles, falling. Durant right there picked me up. He's like, come on, cuz, can't fall. But I think that might have been the hardest one for sure.
Yeah, those were legendary, and I used to love those because you really, if you're a good coach, and I like to think I was, I would really learn more about my players just being a part of that workout, to where you're like, Devin just kicked the shit out of that workout, like, he's going to be a grown ass man this fall. You know what I mean? Like, you see that. And my favorite was the rope. Because your ass, all of you would be blown out. You know, it's a 2-hour workout. You'd be an hour and a half through it. Like, you can't lift your arms
at all.
You get on that rope, and I'd get on the other side and talk shit. Like, you're going to let my out of shape ass beat you right now. Like, all the while, you're blown out. I'm fresh as hell. Like, but I used to love it because it's like, you could see what kind of fight you had in a player. It was awesome.
Yeah. And I think another thing too was, it, like, us as players, like, it brought us closer too, because, you know, you see a guy failing or something, or you see him, like, not being able to hold his own, and you're picking him up and you're encouraging him, and, you know, he end up pulling through and finishing the workout super hard, and it was just always satisfying seeing that. And I think every player in that program had that quality where, you know, it was always important for the other guy to do as well, just as much as the guy actually doing it.
Yeah, for sure. So tell me this, what makes Mickey Marotti so good?
Man, I can go down the list, but I think the one thing that I can say is he wants you to be great. Yeah. He wants you to achieve everything that you can. And I remember, I mean, even when it comes to just hitting your weight.
Yeah, right.
I remember I would come in every day, like, man, I want you 200 to 205 pounds. And every day I would come in, I'd be 197, 198. And he'd be on me so crazy. Go chug some water. And I'm like, bro, I ain't going to be able to work out. And, like, he was just on me every single day that I wasn't at my weight. And when I was at my weight, it was just like the proudest moment for him.
Yeah.
And just having that, I mean, I remember, like, I didn't like him when they first came. I used to be like, yo, you spitting in my face. Like, I can't stand you right now. But over the years, man, you know, he spent so much time with us and just, you know, developing us. Like, I just grew a love for him. Like, I really appreciate everything that he's done. I mean, even to this day, like, the way I work out, I try to think of him. Like, I think of him yelling at me right now, like, do this last rep. But, man, it's just his like, love for us to achieve greatness, man, is just unmatched, I think.
Yeah. He had a unique gift of being able to develop an individual relationship with almost every kid on the team.
Everyone.
Which is weird. I mean, the head coach doesn't, like, Urban could never do that. Like, I could do it, but I had 12 guys. You know what I mean? He could do it with, I mean, he did it with everyone. Walk-ons, like, there wasn't a kid that he didn't have a good relationship with.
Exactly.
You know? And it didn't matter. I mean, it did, you know, you'd find yourself in his group on the lifting day if you were, like, a great player. But other than that, like, he had a relationship with everyone. I think he's really, really good at what he does. Now, kind of in the same line of questioning, tell me what it's like to play, not only play for Urban Meyer, but play receiver for Urban Meyer. Talk to me about that experience.
Man, you ain't got your damn release right, boy. He gonna be on your ass.
What?
But to me, I think the thing that I liked about Coach Meyer was he's a motivator. He will make you feel like you can run through a brick wall.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was just honest. You know, it was kind of the same thing with Coach Mick. You know, he just wants you to be great so bad that he would do anything. Yeah. And for him, I remember when we were in training camp and we was the last group to leave. I'm talking about we done did the two-a-day practices. We done did the late meetings and we still out there working on leases, working on just coverage, simple things. Yeah. Like it was just like, I look back on it now and I'm like, man, he just wanted us to be so great just because he knew we had it in us.
Yep.
And you know, I remember, you know, we were out there and we were working on the grab and pull with the release.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about, break his fucking arm, break his arm. And literally, all of us out there slapping each other, whack, whack, whack. And when, you know, we leave and then everybody's arm red and shit. And it's like, he just wanted everybody to be so elite at what they do.
Oh, there's no doubt.
And just, you know, that right there, you know, I can't speak on every coach in college football, but with Coach Meyer, man, that's one thing I did love about him. You know, he will do everything in his power to pull that greatness out of you.
He definitely will. And, you know, in my career, really in Urban's time there, the way I view it is there was really like two generations of receiver groups, right? There was your receiver group, which was insanely loaded. You look at you, Mike, Evan Spencer, Jalen Marshall, and even throw Philly into the mix. He was kind of like the pre, you know, the old head of the group, right? But
yeah,
there's that group. And then there was the next generation, which was the Terry McLaurin, Paris Campbell, you know, that slew KJ Hill, that group of guys. And so what I thought, one of the coolest things that I was able to do as the receiver coach was one, coach guys like you, guys like Mike, guys like Evan, but also help you guys kind of leave your legacy into the culture of that room, that right now some random high school kid is walking in into a culture in a room because of stuff you did right back in 2012 or whenever. And so just kind of talk about that culture. Like, what is that legacy that was left with the 2014 class group of receivers?
Man, you know, just that whole that meaning of zone six. I mean, I remember when we were coming up with it.
Yeah.
And zone six, we was bomb squad, all that. Like,
yep.
we had this, everybody just wanted to do something great. And to be able to, you know, have guys like Terry, Paris, I mean, even with Curtis Samuel, you know, making that switch from running back to receiver.
Yeah.
You know, they seen like the tough times that we had to go through and you know, really, really develop. And I think just leaving the legacy of, you know, being the best receiver group in the nation. And we took pride in that every single week, you know, go out there and do something great, whether it's blocking, catching the ball, running the routes, whatever, be the best at it. And, you know, it was something that we took pride in. And I mean,
for sure,
we had so many different personalities in the room. You know, we had Evan, who was the greatest blocker out of all of us.
For sure.
Then you had Mikey T, you know, he was great at the line.
Yep.
Noah was great at blocking. I mean, you know, Noah took surprise with everybody with just his playmaking ability. And then even it went down to, you know, the walk-ons that we had and some of the guys who probably wouldn't even a play, but they even took on that, okay, man, this is what it is right here. This is what we need to do. And, you know, you see guys like Cato, man, he come in the game and playing and
cook.
And just do his thing because he's been through it. He's done seen it. He knew exactly what he needed to do to have success whenever he gets that chance.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Well, I think it's going to be cool 40 years from now because that's the Zone 6 personality, right? The culture, the legend that is that Zone 6. I mean, it's going to be at Ohio State forever. I mean, that's not something, you know, sometimes you see around the country, like a coach will try to, you know, give his group a nickname or something like that. And it's kind of the coach leaves. It's not whatever, but Zone 6, I mean, I'm gone. They're still putting out videos talking about Zone 6. Like that's your group that you started. And that's the name that it'll be 40 years from now. And people won't believe you when you're like, no, I'm telling you, like, we came up with that shit.
We started like,
no,
that.
You didn't.
We started that. We originated that, man. I mean, man, it means so much. I mean, even to this day, man, every time I see some of my guys, man, Zone 6, like, it's just what it is, man. It's ingrained in us, man. But,
it is.
You know, seeing some of the guys that's come after me, man, I mean, there's so many great talents that's coming through that, you know, I feel can definitely continue on that Zone 6 mantra. And man, it's super humbling to, you know, be a part of, for sure.
Well, it's really cool. And I know Buckeye Nation is forever grateful, not only for all the touchdowns and the championship and everything else, but for helping start that culture. I mean, and really, because they're going to benefit from it for a long time. But I want to switch gears kind of before I get you out of here and talk about kind of the transition to the NFL. Obviously drafted by the New York Jets. You spent time in Dallas, Houston, and now you're with the Patriots. Just kind of talk about what that process has been like. Not only, you know, getting drafted, the Jets, how that all went, and then also the injuries and the mental health side of that. Because I think you have a very unique voice to talk to, you know, kids that get injured or someone that, you know, goes through some kind of adversity like that. Cause I think you've come out of it strong as shit. Just after talking to you, I'm like, I just feel great about you because I know you, everything is in the right place and you're going to take another shot at it in New England. So just talk to me about the NFL. What's it like?
Hey man, it's definitely a blessing. I mean, we play this game at such a young age and we just think of it as, you know, we in the backyard playing. But once you get to that next level, it's completely different. It ain't just a game. It's a business.
Yeah,
and any team will boot you out, no matter if you're the best player on that team or the sorriest player on the team. They will boot you out so quick. And that's one thing that I've, you know, seen so much. You know, I've seen guys come in next week, they're not here.
Right.
And, you know, it's definitely scary, you know, because we play this game at such a young age and we just think it's just a game. But when we get to this level, it's so different.
Yeah.
But my experience coming in, you know, I just had the mindset, all right, man, I'm in the NFL now. It's a dream that I've been wanting forever. It's here now. Let me come in. Let me do everything I can to just make an impact. And I just wanted to play. That's all I was thinking about. Just play, yeah. Make plays and do my thing. And started off well, OTAs went well. You know, the learning curve with the playbook was a little different, but I ended up picking it up and me in training camp, man, I ended up getting hurt. And the thing about the NFL and I mean even college football is you need training camp. Yeah, training camp is so important. And my rookie year, I missed that, you know, due to an injury. And coming back it was just, you know, I had to catch up with everything. Everybody already ahead of me. You know, they done finished training camp out. So I'm, you know, in a catch up mode. And so, you know, I had my ups and downs and I ended up catching right back up and I started playing well. I ended up scoring against Miami. My rookie year was my first touchdown. And we were playing Tennessee and it might have been like week 12, 13. And I'm running down as a gunner. And then, boom, me and a guy kind of collided and my ACL tears. And from that point on, I just was thinking, like, man, I've never in my life been hurt.
Right.
Like, through high school, never missed a game or practice. College, never missed a game or practice. And here I am in the NFL, a dream that I've wanted so bad. And now I'm like, could be one of the worst injuries for a receiver.
Yeah.
And the whole time I'm just thinking like, man, I just got to put everything in it to just come back. And so I make a full recovery. And I'm coming back and I'm on the pup list, and you know, I'm just practicing, just gaining my confidence back, getting back in the flow of things. And we finished the year out. Ended up playing like the last two games of the season. So now I'm in the mindset of, all right, I'm about to come in here going into year three, and I'm trying to destroy everything. And we going into year three, and I ended up tearing it again. And I think at that moment was so real for me, because I just feel like I didn't even scratch the surface of how good I could have been.
Right.
And, you know, it's just, I'm thinking to myself, like, if I can't come back and play this, like, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? I've been playing this game since I'm 5, 6 years old, and like it's so close to being taken away. And I just remember after the last surgery that I had, I got cut into both my knees. Yeah. So I woke up in the hospital bed, and my right leg is in a CPM machine. My left leg is iced up. And I'm waking up, and I'm just thinking to myself, like, bro, is this it?
Right.
Like, this is like, is it over with? And I just was thinking to myself, like, bro, this can't be real right now. Like, this right. can't be real. And I remember sitting in the hotel. I had did my surgery in Vail, Colorado, and I'm sitting in the hotel room. And at the time, I think the draft was going on. It might have been on like the, I don't know, maybe second, third round, maybe. And the Jets, they ended up drafting two receivers. And when they were talking about it, like my name came across the ticker. And they was like, yeah, it's confirmed, Devin Smith tears his ACL. And I just felt like this big, man. Like,
yeah.
It hurt so bad, because I'm like, man, I put so much work in. Put so much work in. Just get to this spot right here.
Yeah.
And, you know, from that moment moving forward, man, I like it was definitely messing with my mental, man. I was in a rough spot, man. I was depressed. I'm talking about, I wouldn't even leave the house. I would go rehab, come right back home, rehab, right back home, wouldn't do nothing. Really didn't talk to nobody. I was so down just from that happening. And it was definitely a tough time that and I didn't think I was going to be able to climb out of. So it was hard.
But you have, is the moral of the story, right?
Yeah.
I mean, talk about how you feel now. I mean, what you're with New England, obviously you got to wait until probably the day before you have to be there is when you'll find out when you have to be there. But, but you're with New England. Talk about just your mindset, where you're at today.
Yeah, so I mean, right now, man, I feel great, man. You know, just that whole time rehabbing and stuff, man, I just stayed at it. I just didn't give up. You know, it came to a point where I told myself, like, man, I can't keep feeling sorry for myself. I can't keep, you know, going back thinking, you know, what if this happens? What if this happens? And I just told myself, like, just put everything you got into it, man, and see what come out of it. And once I got back to, you know, being able to run routes again and, you know, get on my feet and run and work on my craft and stuff like that, man, I seen that I still got it. I still can go out there and I still can run. I still put my foot in the ground, get out of my break, this and that. And I just told myself, I'm like, nah, I gotta stay focused now. I can't go back to that space. And so I climbed out of it. And just from that day, I had a new mindset. And when Dallas came and signed me, it was like a new life for me. And that, you know, I will always be grateful for Dallas, because before getting signed by them, I had like 6-7 workouts with teams. And they all like, man, the workout looked great, man. But I knew they didn't want to sign me because of my injury history.
Yeah, right.
And so when Dallas came knocking on the door and they signed me, man, they gave me all the opportunity in the world to just, you know, go out there and leave it all out. And so I had a great training camp, great preseason. season didn't go how I wanted it to go, but, you know, I was still able to make plays while I was there and still show that I still can play. And now I'm with New England now, and I'm just looking forward to the opportunity. For me, it's I know what I'm capable of, and all I'm worried about is the opportunity. Yeah. And so I think the biggest lesson that I took out of just, you know, climbing out of that and, you know, not really expecting always to be the guy wherever I go. You know, I think at this point in my career, a lot of people know who I am. They know what I'm capable of doing. It's just now I got to show it now. And so for me, I'm so looking forward to the opportunity. You know, I was in Houston for a short stint. And, you know, I was just looking forward to the opportunity just to be out there and practicing, being out there, just running around and working on my game and stuff. And, you know, I ended up not working out there, but like I said, man, I'm just looking forward to the next opportunity. So now I'm like I said, I'm here in New England now and looking forward to the opportunity, man. I'm just working, man.
You're in the right spot. That's for sure. If there is a place that will find magic in Devin Smith, it's going to be New England. Cause not even because of you, just because that'd be the most Bill Belichick shit to ever happen. Like Devin kind of bounced around and all of a sudden Bill Belichick has a freaking all pro receiver. That just sounds like Bill Belichick, you know?
Most definitely.
Yeah. I'm rooting for you. Buckeye Nation's rooting for you. But I want to end with I have two questions and they're kind of more funny, not as career oriented. One, I want you to give me some insight. Like, what the hell is going through your mind when you're 45 yards downfield and that ball's in the middle of the air and you're about to go make a play against Wisconsin? It could have been anybody. Like, what's going through your head?
So, me, man, I'm thinking, I'm watching the flight of the ball. I want to know, do I need to slow down or do I need to speed up?
Right.
And, you know, a lot of times throughout my career, I've either had to slow down or it's been right there.
Yeah.
And so for me, man, I always think of it like catching a punt. And it's in a weird way, it's weird that I'm saying catch it like a punt. You know what I mean? When I gotta catch it over my shoulder or something like that. But I don't know, it's just I got a great sense of when that ball is in flight, because I feel like my stride length, I'm able to get downfield so quick.
Oh yeah,
and like I'm yards down the field, and just I'm looking at the flight of the ball, man. Really, just knowing if I need to slow down or if I need to speed up and just make the catch.
That's it, right? Braxton Miller told me, I think this is probably your junior year. He looked at me going into your junior year that summer. You know how in the summer it's way more laid back. Like after you guys threw, I think you guys threw outside in a Woody. On a turf, and he came in, he was just kind of sitting there waiting for Coach Herman, just weird as bullshit. And he was like, I was like, how my guys look? And he was like, man, they look crispy, like real good. And he was like, I was like, how'd Devin do? He was like, Coach, I can't out throw Devin. I was like, what do you mean? He was like, when we run deep balls and Devin's up, I try to throw it as far as I can. And no matter what, I can't out throw Devin.
I remember that day because you have this
it's like it's another gear that most people don't have, where it's like wherever the ball is, like you can get there. Like most people would be like, oh, it's overthrown. Well, he's running 4.3. For you, it's like it just never was overthrown.
Yeah, I remember that day like it was yesterday. But yeah, we were in the Woody and he was like, man, I bet I can out throw you. I said, I bet you can't. And Cardell was out there too, and I was like, look, I'm going to just run a go route, and whenever you want to throw, just throw as far as you can.
Yeah.
And I remember just taking off, and when I look back, I'm like, damn, this motherfucker really threw it. And so I'm thinking it's going over my head, so I like get up on my giddy up a little bit, and then as it's starting to level out and come down, I'm like, oh, this, all right, let me slow down a little bit.
This is nothing.
Man, but yeah, like those times right there, man, just being in the Woody, man, clowning with the guys, man, just working on our game. That shit I'm going to always miss. Like
It's the best part about it all.
Most definitely.
All right, last one is a question I ask everybody that ever comes on the show. Well, that played the game. Now, I mean, I don't ask like nerds or anybody else. any athlete that comes on a show, I ask this question. If there's one person that you've ever played with, played against, doesn't matter. Just one person that if you, like, if a brawl breaks out, like the Michigan-Ohio State brawl, right? The last person you want to be looking across from about to fight on a football field, who would it be? Like the baddest dude you ever played with anywhere.
Man, that like I don't want to fight? Or
yeah, that what? You don't want to fight. Like you look over like, damn, not this motherfucker.
Man. Man, oh, that's tough because like I want to say Chris Carter because how big his ass was.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like I'm real cool with him. So I know how like genuine of a person he is. But, man, that's tough.
There's got to be somebody that had hands or something.
See, I mean, I mean, Noah Spence, he was a little cuckoo. I haven't seen really too. I ain't seen too many guys fight, but if I had to pick, man, but yeah, probably Noah Spence.
I will tell you, Joshua Perry said John Simon because he said he would just never stop.
Like, oh yeah. I can see that. So funny thing, I'm in New England, right?
Yeah,
and I had caught a pass and. You know, they were like coming down, just kind of breaking down. And like, I caught the pass and attorney right there. Stoned me right in the chest. I'm like, damn, bro, come on. So, yeah, I could definitely see that for sure. He's one of the strong motherfuckers, man, for sure. Oh,
that's for sure. Well, I appreciate you, man. It's always good to catch up and we're rooting for you. You know that, though.
Oh, yeah, man. Appreciate it, man.
Well, keep me updated, man. Keep me in the loop. Let me know what's going on with you.
I got you, man. Always, for sure.
I appreciate you, Devin.
All right, now.
All right. Well, there you have it. The man, the myth, the legend, Devin Smith, the greatest deep ball receiver in, I think, college football history. He was unbelievable. He had a gear like I've never seen on film from anyone else, never seen of anyone I've coached or been around, just never seen it. I mean, just absolutely dynamic. When he hit 30 yards on the run from that 30 to 45, 50 when he caught the ball, it was unparalleled. But anyways, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. Hope you were entertained. Hope you enjoyed it. As always, we appreciate your support. Check out everything we got going on, man. We're really trying to blow this thing up and become a pillar in sports media. We're trying to take on the giants, the full of shit giants, really. We're starting with Columbus local media, and then we'll keep moving bigger and badder. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate you. And if you didn't like it, as we say, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
What a hit, Denzel Ward! You got barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Well, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here then.
I am.
Okay, see ya.